Welcome to the 1000 Hours Outside podcast. My name is Ginny Erich, and I am so excited that Gay Hendricks is back with us today. Welcome!
Thank you very much. It's great to see you again.
It's good to see you, and you just came out with a new book called Your Big Leap Year. Huge congrats to you.
Thank you.
I would imagine this one would be tricky to write. So this is the concept of the big leap that you and I talked about already, but you took it into bite-sized chunks. So I read it in a way that is probably not the way that you're supposed to read it, but to prepare for this podcast, I did read the whole thing in less than a year. But I love how you were able to take it day by day, and it spirals down, and these ideas come around with different stories, and it's a lot to think about. And I thought, what a tool. What a tool for you to use with your family, for you to use with your kids, just one day at a time. And I do love that it came out in the leap year. Was that on purpose?
Yes, it was, actually. When I first started the book, it didn't occur to me, but then suddenly I realized, oh my gosh, if I can get this finished so it can come out in 2024. So that's how we did it. And a lot of people have asked me over the years to write such a book, a day book with 365, or in this case, 366 days in it. And I'd always kind of put it off and said, okay, I'll do that eventually. But this past year, I decided to finally do it. And so I'm really happy we did, because the feedback on it has been just great. I mean, The Big Leap, you know, lots of people have read The Big Leap and have asked, you know, what do I do on a daily basis? How do I make that happen? And so this has something you can do every day that might take 30 seconds or 2 minutes. None of them are very long at all, but just gives you a guide every day about how to go deeper and deeper into your zone of genius.
Yes. And I would imagine a book like that might be tricky to write, to take it and to break it up into bite-sized chunks. But you did such a phenomenal job. There is so much in here to talk about. So I'm so glad that you're here. I want to talk and start here. And you even said this is one of the things that comes up a lot on podcasts and TV interviews and things like that. But this concept of time, Einstein time. So I really wrestled with this reading the book, and actually I've been trying it. This concept of, I feel like I'm constantly checking my watch and checking the clock. And I feel like I have this low level, constant thought toward time. And we're trying to get our kids outside, Gay. There's a good research that says kids should be outside really for hours a day for their optimal development. And everyone says, we don't have the time. So start there. I mean, it was bizarre to me, but I did try it.
Yes. Well, the big point of Einstein time is, well, let me start with the payoff. If you really get it, how it works, in my experience, it allows you to get twice as much done in half the time. And the reason for that is, you see, most people have a time consciousness where they're hyper-vigilant about time and always make sure they get there on time. And, you know, you kind of are focused on the future, living in the future, and that makes you anxious. You have a low level of anxiety about time all the time. Now, there's a whole bunch of other people that have gone the other direction. They're the folks that are always showing up late for the meetings, and other people are having to say, get out of bed and things like that. So they've kind of gotten behind the moment. So what we want to do is get it just right so that you're in the moment, but you're not out in front of it because you're anxious, or you're not behind it because you're stuck in the past. So here's the first thing to do. Everybody starts pretty much where you started, in a sense, where you try out the ideas and it seems kind of too much or too big or something like that. But here's the place to start. Start by just looking at where you talk about yourself as a victim of time. It could be as simple as, oh, I'd love to talk to you right now, Ginny, but I've got to run. Or, sure, I'd like to bake cookies for the PTA, but I just don't have time. So time is used as an excuse and as if you're the victim of time. However, I went to the opposite extreme and I said, well, what if we didn't think of ourselves as the victim of time? Because see, I caught myself doing all this. That's where I started thinking of it. Like one day, a long time ago, 30 or 40 years ago, I met somebody on the street and I said something to him, and then I said, I got to run, .. And after I left, I realized, wait a minute, there was absolutely no time pressure. I just didn't want to stand there and talk to the person. So I used time as my weapon, so to speak, what I could hang it on. All of that is about feeling a scarcity of time. And that can only be corrected one way. And that is by owning that you're where time comes from. I mean, it sounds like a crazy thing to say, but look, we are all part of the universe. We're all in this together. We're all made exactly of the same bits of chemistry that makes a plant or a frog or my cat sitting over there. And so given that we're all made of the same thing and we're all part of this one universe, if you say, I don't have time, you're saying, I don't want to participate in this universe as it is. And that's not a good place to be because like Frank Zappa once said, the musician, he said, in the war between you and the universe, bet on the universe. You know, if you set up an antagonistic relationship with time, then every moment of every day has got you feeling anxious about time. And so if you just take on the idea, well, wait a minute, maybe I am part of this universe and maybe I am part of time. And now, instead of being the enemy of time and at odds with time, what if I made friends with time? What if I said, wow, I choose to be exactly where I am? You know, like a while back, I heard myself, even though I've been thinking about this for ages, I found myself thinking, I have to go to the dentist this afternoon at 3 o'clock. And then after I said it, I realized, wait a minute, I don't have to do anything. I choose to go to the dentist this afternoon at 3 o'clock, not because I'm a victim, because I choose it. And that's exactly the attitude that springs you free of all of your time limitations.
It's worth it to read the book because it did make a difference. Let me tell you how I tried it. You can tell me if I tried it right or wrong. I tried it when I was getting ready for this podcast. So in line with what you write about, I love this. I love the opportunity to get a chance to talk with an author of a book. I think it is the most wildly cool opportunity. I love that we match. We showed up matching today with our outfits. We have the same color on.
I didn't realize that.
I love to read and I love to prepare. I love that this medium gives me an opportunity to dive deep into a book and read it for almost more than maybe you normally would. But when I'm getting ready for podcasts, I'm constantly checking the time. So I changed. I really like doing this. So I'm not going to pay attention to what time it is. I'm not going to check constantly. You look up in the corner of my computer screen and see what time it is. And I'm going to just get done what I can get done. And here we are. I finished a half hour earlier than I thought. And here we sit. And it's fine. So it definitely changed. I mean, I felt like I had a low, like you said, a low level of anxiety constantly. You talk about a frantic pace. Now, in the course of this book, Your Big Leap Year, this topic comes up, it spirals, it comes up several different times. And so you really get a chance to dive deep into it. And you have these different things that people could say, like you said, be friends with time, which I never thought about that. I always was looking at time as, like you said, I don't have enough. I feel completely at ease with time in my life. What a statement. What a statement. And so I think too, even when we're outside with our kids, this is what we're trying to do. I would be one that would be looking at my watch and how much time do we have left and when do I have to leave and what's the next thing? So I thought this the Einstein time is brilliant and it worked. Did I do it right?
Yes, you did it wonderfully well. Well, the story of Einstein's that got me started thinking about this a long time ago was he was asked to explain the theory of relativity to, I think, some 14-year-olds or junior high students. And he said, imagine that if you're sitting on a hot stove, a minute goes by like an hour. Whereas if you're with your boyfriend or girlfriend, an hour goes by like a minute. Why is that? Well, I'll put that in purely old human psychological terms, and that it's that what you resist persists, in the sense that if you're sitting on a hot stove, there's about 99.9% of your cells that don't want to be there. And so you're wanting not to be where you are. And that takes you into a state of consciousness where time really slows down. Because I don't know if you remember in school, you know, I was always looking at the clock when I was in school, because I always say I was in school for 12 years, but I spent 11.5 of those years looking at the clock to see if the period was over yet, you know? And so I had the extreme version of your adaptation to time. You know, I was really way out in front of the moment and wanted to be somewhere I wasn't all the time. But the most delicious awareness comes over you, though, when you realize that, wait a minute, right now in the present is the only place where I can feel love and enjoy life and appreciate just the majesty of what's going on around me. That all takes place in the present moment. There was a great quote by John Lennon many years ago where he said, life is what's going on while you're busy making other plans. You know, that you're thinking about all this stuff up here, and then life is going on right around you all the time.
Mm-hmm. This is important stuff to know, especially if you're trying to orchestrate your life a certain way and include different pieces of it. I liked this: begin with a complete abstinence of complaining about time, especially your lack of it. So that is something I'm definitely going to do. There's all sorts of things in here that you can try to do, and you relate it with hurry and adrenaline addiction. You said, it took me years to get to the point where I felt like I was moving at a healthy pace. So this is talking about hurrying. We all feel like we're in a hurry. I don't even know if I would know what the healthy pace is.
That's a beautiful question to raise, to wonder about. Around here, we call it your essence pace, the pace you move at that brings forth your maximum quality of your essence, your genius, who you truly are. Well, the first thing I think you're doing, which is really good, which is noticing that you're of the type that tends to be more in a hurry than that other type I'm talking about, which is you have trouble getting them out of bed in the morning and they're always showing up late. And you're where most successful people are. So the thing for you to look at, and anybody that is in a hurry, the way I say it now is, being in a hurry is a sign of impending mental health difficulties, because you have this moment, and if you're in a hurry, you're trying to get to the next moment, and you're not being in this moment. In a way, the smarter you are, the more you fall prey to that particular type of problem, because your mind works so well, you're always leaping out into the future, figuring out things, and then people say, hey, did you hear what I just said? And you said, no. And I saw a thing on Instagram the other day that it was written by a woman that said, they forgot to tell me that when I ordered up my husband, the ears came separately. And so the important thing, though, Jenny, is to put a priority on living in this present moment rather than living in the future or living in the past, because here is where all the magic happens. Here is where you get to experience love and life and beauty and gratitude and appreciation and compassion. And of course, pain too. That's part of life. A lot of people have an erroneous thinking mechanism. They think in their minds that there are like two faucets. One faucet says pain and the other faucet says pleasure. And the idea is to turn up pleasure and turn down pain. But like one of my old mentors, Jack Downing, used to say, there's only one faucet, and it's called awareness. That's what it has written on it. And you either keep it closed or you keep opening it up. I'm a cheerleader for keeping opening up all the time, more and more, your awareness of yourself, your consciousness of how you are in the world and what you're doing and how you're speaking and whether you're living your dream. I caught onto this back in the 80s and I put a priority on it. So by the end of the century, I was basically spending all my time doing what I most love to do. That's one of the big payoffs of focusing on the big leap in Einstein time is you spend more and more of your time in your zone of genius. So for the past 25 years, I've only done things that I really love to do. And I noticed one thing about that, and you may have noticed it too, I'm just as excited about it now as I was 40 years ago. You know, it doesn't get boring to me to talk with people and to work with people on these ideas, because every day I always say I have the best inbox in town, because people write me their from all over the world, they write me their big leaps that they've accomplished. So I get to have these beautiful experiences of seeing what happens to people's lives when they begin to put these ideas to work.
On weekends, we're typically off on another adventure. Whether it's a scenic hike or a quaint town visit, I keep my Vessies with me because they effortlessly adapt to every twist and turn, ensuring comfort and style in our sometimes spontaneous escapades. Whether it's with the kids or just my husband and me, which is pretty rare, I love stepping into a great outdoor adventure with Vessi's Storm Burst boots to capture the beauty of springtime landscapes. Their robust style is perfect for our nature excursions, adding a little dash of elegance to our outdoor explorations. The Vessi collection caters to every style. Whether you're dressing up for a night out or gearing up for a weekend hike, these shoes seamlessly blend into your wardrobe while offering the practicality of waterproof footwear. Ready to refresh your spring wardrobe? Vessi has you covered with footwear that fuses style with practicality. Head over to vessi.com/outside to explore their versatile collection and automatically claim your 15% discount on your first order upon checkout. That's vessi.com/outside for 15% off your first order.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
What a life. What a life. It's neat for me. I came across your work within the past couple of years through a friend who gave a different friend the book, The Big Leap. And then I had heard about it, so I want to read it. And then we got a chance to talk. And I've been watching your videos with you and your wife. And you both, you're fit, you're happy, you're exuding all of this positivity. And yet you say that at one point, you were 100 pounds overweight. And
yes,
at one point, you were not happy. And one of the things that you have done is, I mean, you can physically see the change. You can physically see it looking at you. And that's sort of kind of, I think, what everyone wants. A lot of people are struggling. And you make this change. And one of the biggest things is that you have increased your willingness to feel good.
Yes, that's one of the biggest secrets of life, is to put a priority on feeling good for longer and longer periods of time. That's where I came up with this idea of the upper limit problem, because I realized 40 years ago that I had a limited tolerance for feeling good. I could feel good for about 3 days, and then I'd mess it up somehow, even with simple things like eating. You mentioned that I was at one point 100 pounds overweight. And now I weigh 180, 85 pounds. In those days, I weighed 300 pounds. I'd always suffered from childhood obesity, but I took on that problem for myself, and I lost 100 pounds in a most unusual way. I started eating only foods that I'd never eaten before. I thought, okay, everything I've eaten up until now has made me weigh 300 pounds. What if I just quit eating all of that and started eating these things like fruits and vegetables, for example? That was one of my big discoveries that year. I lost 100 pounds. I don't think I'd ever really tasted a piece of broccoli before. And I suddenly discovered there were these things like broccoli and asparagus and apples and blueberries. And I just became so kind of stoned on eating well for that year, eating foods that I'd never eaten before. And that actually led me to my first upper limit problem, because the first month I started eating this different way, I was 24 years old, I lost 35 pounds in a month. I was feeling like $1 million. And I was walking down the street feeling so good one day. And I looked over to my left through the window of an ice cream shop. And there was a family eating this ice cream sundae, like bananas and three flavors of ice cream. And there was four of them eating this. But I went in by myself. I was in a trance. I said, give me one of those. And for about 20 minutes while I was spooning in all the ice cream and sugar and everything, I felt like the king of the world. I had all that sugar pouring through me. But 20 minutes after that, I got the worst stomach ache of my life. It was like Muhammad Ali punched me in the stomach or some. I doubled over in the street, actually. I was walking down the sidewalk after I had the ice cream sundae, and it was like getting punched in the gut. I bent over and somebody said, are you okay, sir? Are you okay? I was definitely not okay. But I didn't want to tell them the whole story. But that was my first big upper limit problem. So I realized, oh, I've only got a limited tolerance for how good I can feel. So I started growing that. And Katie and I, well, that's how our relationship got to be where it is too, because we met actually, we just celebrated our 44th anniversary of the day we met in 1980. Thank you. So we put a priority on seeing how we blocked the flow of positive energy between us and then gradually eliminating all those things. Criticism was a big one. We, after a year or so, we decided to make a commitment to making our relationship a blame and criticism-free environment. So we basically trained ourselves not to criticize each other or ourselves or blame anybody for anything. It took us several years, though, to do that. So you got to be willing to put in some practice time. Sometimes maybe there's overnight miracles that can happen, but a lot of times people get to where they are by putting in some sustained attention to it. And if you want to grow a great relationship or a great relationship with your body, you know, be prepared to put in, it's not work, it's just moments of attention where you're paying attention to things that make a difference in your life.
Yeah, and that's why a book like this is so great, because it is a daily reminder, like the Bickersons. That's one of the things that's in here, right? You talk about the Bickersons, and I wrote that down. A lot of things about your relationships.
Way back, there was this comedy on called The Bickersons on the radio. Where we caught on to it is Katie's parents, when they would come to visit us, they would keep this running bickering going. It used to just give me a headache. I mean, it was like a ping pong match, you know, one negative thing back and forth. And Katie and I, you know, we had just stopped doing that. So it really stood out like a sore thumb. So it made us think. I remember the first time we had them out for a few days in Colorado. After they left, we both looked at each other and said, okay, we've got to go all the way with eliminating blame and criticism, because we don't want to ever be like these two. And, you know, they were wonderful people, but it was like my grandparents too. If you got them individually, they were the most wonderful people. But if you put them in the same room together, it was just like sparks would fly all the time. They were married 63 years, but like my mother said, they weren't speaking to each other for about 59 and a half of those years. So I got to be a relationship expert very early by trying to translate, keep my grandparents in the same room together.
And I think most people are interested in this topic. The Bickersons runs all the way through how to stop yourself from squabbling. Really important information. I really was drawn to this piece of continued growth. So you talked about actually several different things, but you were talking about that you're in your 70s and you wrote a book. It's this thought of long-term creativity. And here we are on this precipice of generative AI and computers that can make music and art and all, write stories and all of those different things. And you say we have to keep our creativity taps turned on full flow in order to keep growing. Not to do so is to stagnate. This is especially true after 50 years of age. What is the relationship? I don't think anyone really thinks about this. Like, creativity sort of seems like, okay, yeah, maybe it's important, maybe it's not. But you say there's a relationship between creative expression and psychological growth.
Yes.
That sounds like a big deal. Can you tell us about that?
It is a big deal. And especially when you get up, like I said, up into your 40s and 50s and beyond, there's a great developmental psychologist at Harvard named Eric Erickson. And he said that each decade has a developmental challenge. For example, he said the challenge in the 50s, when you're 50 to 60, the challenge is between creativity and stagnation. Are you growing every day creatively, or are you stagnating? And going on up into your 60s, it becomes even more profound because he said the choice in your 60s and beyond is integrity versus despair. Integrity meaning, are you lined up? Have you fulfilled, or are you fulfilling your life's purpose? Are you loving the people that you love? Do you have love in your life? Are you lined up with what you most want in the world? And if you are, you have integrity. And if you don't, it's very easy to slip into despair after the age of 60 or go on up into your 70s. I've done a lot of research on this problem. And even if you look back into the early days, 2,000 years ago at the beginning when they were assembling the original Bible, there was one famous gospel, the Gospel of Thomas, that they decided not to put in the official Bible, but it has some really juicy stuff in it. One thing it says is, if you bring forth what is within you will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you will destroy you. The idea that we all have something we're here to do, and if you bring it forth and make that real in your life, you get to have a level of satisfaction that's very rare on this planet. That if you get yourself lined up with what you most love to do and what your biggest contribution can be, and you make good on that, wow, that leads to some very fine living moment to moment. But if we don't do that, you know, we're always going to have that little gnawing place inside that says, I'm not doing what I'm here to do.
And we can follow your example, because it is great to see when you've got these books coming out. You got a book that came out 40 years ago that's still selling, Love Yourself. So this whole process, and this is an example of this topic that spirals throughout the book. One of the times you were talking about a cellist, I thought this was so fascinating. He was still practicing. He was like in his 80s, and he was one of the best cellists in the world. And they said, well, do you still practice? And he said, oh, only 3 hours a day. Because he had used to practice 5 or 6, so 3 was less, but still. And then later on in the book, you're talking about Pablo Picasso and how he had painted almost 150,000 works of art all the way up until he was age of 91. So it reminded me to prioritize that. I think sometimes, especially as a mom, it's very easy for me, well, to say, I don't have time. I mean, I love to play the piano. It was very easy for me, or read fiction. So I don't have the time for that. So this is a long-term thing to be thinking about, so that we're setting ourselves up for that down the road, that it's related to our psychological, what did it say? Our psychological growth. That's a big deal.
It's a big deal, because everybody knows people that have stopped growing in their lives and what happens. It doesn't lead to a pretty story, but I've had the exact opposite pleasure of seeing people that had kind of given up rekindle their lives. That's one of the beautiful things about being, because of our book, Conscious Loving, Katie and I do a lot of work with relationships and couples and couple seminars and that kind of thing. And one of the most beautiful things I ever see is a couple who have kind of imploded and are just grinding it out, to suddenly see them come alive again and look into each other's eyes with the same kind of love that happened the first day they were together. I never get tired of that. Even though I see things like that every day, pretty much, I really never get tired of it, because to me, the big turn on in human life is our immense potential and living out our immense potential. You know, it was only 100, 200 years ago that there was some write-up in one of the scientific journals that said that the locomotive could never go, they were they were trying to figure out a locomotive that would go 40 miles an hour. And this guy wrote, we cannot have the locomotive that goes 40 miles an hour because the human body will explode at 30 miles an hour. And he said that, you know, like it's scientific truth. And everybody went for that. And finally, one day they had a locomotive that went 40 miles an hour and nobody exploded. And so we're always going beyond the known and going into the unknown. And that's where all the big fun is. To go into the unknown, that place to start from is owning your own genius, owning your own right to be here and right to be a creative part of this universe. See, I don't think this universe makes any duds. Like there used to be a little, a button that people used to wear said, God don't make no junk. It's like all of us have this immense amount of creativity inside ourselves that needs to be actualized. And when it is, people get to feel good and other people around you get to feel good.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And this is about the fear. You just got to go for it. You got to stretch yourself. There was a lot in here about that. You got to step out into the discomfort. As you start to walk the path, the way appears. It's so good. There's a lot of different types of topics in the book that spiral around. And so you really get a good sense of it. Don't be afraid to start over. Oh, I loved this. Don't be afraid to start over. This time you're not starting from scratch. You're starting from experience. And you said, I've seen magnificent things happen to people who make big leaps in their lives. In every case, including my own, we had to go outside our comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Good. People got to go run and pick up this book.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck. And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it? We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders. So, join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Get out of there, life gunk. Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. Wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. Because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking it.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
I want to talk about your childhood. We'll talk about your childhood. Sure. I got a kick out of this stuff here. I think everyone needs to hear about it. You said, I grew up when screens were mesh covered wooden frames that you put on your window to keep out the bugs. I remember when the first family on my block got a TV, but my conservative mother didn't get one of the newfangled devices until I was out of high school. When I got bored as a kid, I didn't have a screen in my hand to relieve it. Being bored was the catalyst for imagination, fun, and adventure. No screens in your entire childhood, Gay.
That's right. We had a radio, but my mom got a TV set when I went away to college. Thanks, Mom.
And you spent a lot of time with your grandma.
I did. I was blessed to have grandparents. Oh, I wouldn't be here without them, truly. They didn't get along with each other, but they adored me and I adored them. And my grandmother was big, open-hearted woman. And my granddad was very stern and strong and silent type, but he really was just a stand-up guy. And I got to spend a lot of time around him because he ran the local baseball park. And so during the summers when baseball was being played there by the minor league teams that played there, I would spend my days with him in the summer working around the ballpark and laying out the lines and everything. I ran the lights on the scoreboard sometimes. And so I had a kind of a magical baseball oriented childhood with my granddad. And then when I was with my grandmother, when my granddad was doing something else, my grandmother was a great storyteller. And she told me stories. My favorite one was The Three Little Pigs. And my grandmother told it to me over and over and over because she really wanted me to be the pig that built his house on solid ground. I don't know how many hundreds of times she told me that story, but it was my favorite. And I never got tired of listening to it. And I've done my best, Granny, to follow your advice. I have built my house on solid ground.
That's really, really special, Gay. It's so special. I loved what you said about your grandma in here. And there was quite a bit about her simplicity. You said, I was blessed to grow up with a grandmother next door. My mother was a busy career woman, so I spent the majority of my early years in my grandmother's house. I love listening to her stories of the old days, and I also thrived in her easygoing, steady presence. She was a great believer in keeping things simple.
Mm-hmm. She was all heart, my grandmother. And it's funny, she didn't read very much. She just loved to tell stories, and she never read them to me, so she would make them up. And that was what I loved about her stories, is because they'd change a little bit every time. It wasn't the same one out of the book every time. And she was a Southern belle, and she and my granddad got together. My granddad was a cantankerous guy, and my grandmother was equally cantankerous. And she said she was the last unmarried woman in St. Clair County, Alabama, and for good reason, you know, because nobody could get along with her. But my granddad came along and swept her off her feet. But yes, I was very blessed. Actually, I had an aunt and uncle that lived on the block, and then another aunt and uncle that lived on the block half the year. So it was a kind of a Southern enclave kind of a situation that you don't see much anymore.
That's really special. What a grandmother. And that's creative to be able to come up with those stories and tell them a little differently every time, not right out of a book. Just kind of the same things that you're talking about. Well, what did you do if you didn't have a screen? Because kids are on screens. I mean, I just was talking to someone earlier today, Jonathan Haidt, and he just wrote a book called The Anxious Generation. He says that kids that were born, I guess, after 2010, around there, or 2010 to 2015 is when it's actually really changed. So I guess kids that were born a little earlier than that. But he said that they're on social media on average, social media 5 hours a day and on screen for 9 hours a day. Plus they have school. So this is kind of wild. You didn't have any screens and you were bored. And,
well, I made up things. I was the kid in the neighborhood that made up the games. So the other kids would come over to my house and then we would invent something. If it was all boys, we would invent some cowboy game or war game or something like that. But if there were a couple of girls in the mix, we would make one of my favorite games to make up was a Western situation where the women were the bartenders behind the bar and we had gunslingers coming in and you know, things like that. So I had a role for everybody. So I was the game constructor. And what else did I do? Oh, well, when I was by myself, I made up a lot of games. Like I would even throw a football to myself. I would throw a football and then run and catch it. And for a while, I was the only kid of that age in the neighborhood. And fortunately, when I got into elementary school, some other kids moved into the neighborhood, so I had people to play with. But for the first 5 or 6 years of my life, there was nobody around, really. So I was kind of forced to make up things on my own. But I'm glad I did because it made me solidly a creative person. Now I don't have any doubts about my creativity. I could parachute into a desert island and figure out some creative thing to do with coconuts or something like that.
What do you think kids are missing out on with all this screen time?
One thing I think they're missing out on is the constant negotiation of playing real world games and doing real world things and getting in arguments. And also the social media world, a lot of it is so negative with people putting each other down and, you know,
it's the Bickersons.
Yeah, it's the Bickersons made large, you know. I don't think real kids in a real situation out there have time to bicker very much, you know, that they're busy creating things. So getting people outdoors is really where it's at. I know I did a lot of that with my daughter. My daughter is, she's in her 50s now, but when she was little, she was on skis when she was 4 years old.
Oh,
and
cool.
I didn't learn how to ski. I'd never learned how to ski. So I learned how to ski when she does, only I wasn't 4 years old. I was big and it hurt to fall down, but she would fall down 50 dozen times a day and it never even bothered her, you know, because she was 4 years old and close to the ground. But to me, learning something new is one of the great pleasures of life, even if you have to, like skiing, put in some pain to do it. And I think those people who make a daily intention to learn are by and large a great deal happier than people that spend their day being right and justifying being right all the time. That's no fun.
Oh, I love that. I love learning new things too. So there's a lot in this book, Your Big Leap Year, about being bored, about stillness. Go ahead and let yourself feel deeply bored. A lot in there. Really good things for us as adults and also for our kids. You had this statement in here that I thought was really a big one, really a big deal. You said, one of our biggest delusions in the world is the conviction that feeling good comes after you accomplish all your goals and fulfill your desires. Why? I mean, I think almost everybody thinks that. Feeling good comes after. Why does that delusion exist?
Well, I think we get programmed that way. It's very simple to most of us. Eat our beans before we get ice cream as kids. I know in my family, everybody had to finish that plate and make it clean before anybody even thought about dessert. Some of those things are good, that kind of programming to delay gratification until you've done something good for yourself. But on the other hand, if you wait until something has happened to feel good, you're really cheating yourself out of feeling good as you go about getting there. Because in life, it's not about getting places exclusively. It's about how you get there. You know, and if you get to, you know, like my wife and I drove out to, I'd never seen Death Valley, and she grew up in California, so she'd seen Death Valley. So we drove out to Death Valley, and it takes us 4 or 5 hours. And if we'd spent the whole time bickering, we'd have a different experience of Death Valley. But we spent the entire time creating and talking about things we were interested in. So when we got to Death Valley, we were in this exalted state of mind to really appreciate the incredible power of a place that, you know, gets to be 120 at noon and then at night gets to be 20 below, you know, and there's these places on planet Earth that embody these incredible paradoxes. And that's just one example, but it's the joy of the journey, not just the getting there, that makes the journey rich. Because when you think about it, how many great big things do you accomplish in your life? At most, maybe 4 or 5 great big things. Maybe you get more, but most people don't even come close to their 5 great big things. I say human beings have the power to make 5 big things happen. A great relationship, a great education, a great career, a great experience of being a spiritual being in a physical world, a great experience of being there for your kids and, you know, the moments of life that are sacred to you. Those are the kind of things that I think make for a life. And the other stuff, the actual getting the thing, you know, it lasts for a little while. I remember, as a matter of fact, my wife still kids me about this a little bit, because there was a point where a stock we invested in way back 30 or 40 years ago took off and made us millionaires for the first time. So I remember we kind of high-fived each other when we saw our account tick over the $1 million mark for the first time. And we went out for a little walk. But then 10 minutes later, you know, we were talking about whatever the next thing is. Because I think a little bit of celebration is good when you get something done, but it's the way you get there. You know, that's the thing that you really want to cultivate. So great to celebrate, but let's make every moment of life a celebration, because after all, there's 9 million species on this planet, and we're the only one right now that's having this kind of conversation. So that's worth celebrating, no matter what we're talking about.
We're not bugs. I didn't like that part of the book. It's so good. So many good things here. Start to enjoy the money you already have, the connections you already feel, the creativity you already experience every day. A lot of really good stuff there for parenting. I think it can be tough. Sometimes we're just focused on the grind. And you had said that. You had said you were living a dreary existence. And sometimes being a mom can feel that way, a dreary existence. So there's a lot of hope here and a lot of fun and a lot of life. The thing that my husband and I talked about the most, because usually that happens. I read the book, and then there's usually one topic that I'm like, hey, this one's pretty interesting. And it was about kids' emotions. And even childhood itself, like you said, you know, at some point in early childhood, a setting was established, limiting the level of positivity you allow yourself to feel. I was curious about that. Does that happen subconsciously?
Yes.
Should we parent any certain way in light of that?
Well, let me give you an example. Some years ago, there was a study done where the scientists hung little voice-activated mics around the kids' necks, and they just recorded what was said to the kids for a whole week at school, at home, in a store, that kind of thing. And when they analyzed all of the incoming messages, 85% of them were negative, like, stop doing that, don't do that, if you do that, I'm going to dot, dot, dot. But the one thing that parents can do right away is start balancing that out by making the number of do's exceed the number of don'ts. So that's one very practical thing. You know, you might even hang, if you're a parent, hang one of those around your own neck for a day and just see what comes out of your mouth. You know, I found it very interesting when I did that when my daughter was little after I first saw that study. And I really caught myself doing some of those things too. Good coaches, I mean, a parent has to be a good coach. Good coaches don't just tell you what you've done wrong. They tell you what you could do instead of that. And so I think that's one of the things that, could make parenting a lot easier, I think.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I'm just being mindful of the time. I need to vacate my office for my wife to have an activity next. So I'm going to need to wind things up pretty soon. We have deal where I give her 5 minutes or so to get her stuff in here.
Well, let me ask you one last question. And this is a thing that I talked about with my husband, and we can wrap it up here. Once again, your big leap year, fantastic. It was notes upon notes and interesting things like what jealousy is in here. And this whole thing of willingness to feel good and feel ease, guilt is in here. How do we enjoy positive things, fear, failure, stretching yourself, discomfort, all the things, commitment. I mean, all the things that everybody deals with on a daily basis. So fantastic book. The thing that I talked with my husband most about was this, because children are full of emotions. And I think sometimes that's the hardest piece, right? Is there's temper tantrums and they sort of are losing it. And you say, if a parent was taught to suppress their emotions as a child, their children's emotions will trigger their own. To restore their equilibrium, the parent will try to discourage their kids' emotional expressions and the cycle continues. Maybe this is the key to so much. How do we fix that?
The fix, start inside. Ask yourself, what emotions trigger me? There are only three or four that can possibly trigger people. One is anger. One is sorrow, sadness. One is fear. So there are not very many things in the emotional realm, but they're all very huge. And even if you look at the body, for example, you'll see that up in the shoulders and the back of the neck, those areas tighten up when you're angry, whereas more people feel something in their chest or their throat when they're feeling sad. So there are places in the body that light up with different feelings. And those are the place to start first to learn how in your own life to express those feelings in a straightforward way. The more you can do that, the more you can coach your children to express their feelings in a straightforward way rather than hiding them or throwing a tantrum about them.
Yeah, so fantastic. And I even forgot, worry is in here, which is a big thing. Worry is one of the biggest upper limit problems. So all sorts of information in this fantastic book, Your Big Leap Year, even that if you add an hour of vigorous exercise, it will add a mile or two of new capillary space to your body. So you've actually grown your nervous system and you feel good. I learned so much. Gay, what an honor to not only have talked to you one time, but two times. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Blessings to you. And thank you for occupying your genius zone.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us